Number 2A.
We want to go through those main revisions of the chapter on animal magnetism in the textbook. And you may feel, perhaps, is that necessary? What do we gain if we go back to the old landmarks and look up what Mrs. Eddy was writing 100 years ago? Is that any use? Why not take the last edition and just build on that last edition? Yes, that's naturally possible. The last edition is that on which we really build. But we have always seen that knowing the history of anything is a great help. I always remember that Mrs. Eddy was once asked to give the name of a good practitioner, and she didn't give a name, but she said to that person, take one who knows Christian Science history. That was an interesting answer. Because if one knows Christian Science history, one knows not just material history, one knows spiritual history. One knows how a subject has evolved. And if one knows how the subject has evolved, one is no more in danger to repeat the same mistakes, or at least one is in less danger to repeat the same mistakes. And therefore, it is good that one knows the earlier editions and to know on which basis Mrs. Eddy was building, and that we could see that she revised Science and Health because she could see that that every edition revision would bring out the idea clearer than before. And we like to see the idea clear. And actually we see that clear if one compare what has been thought before, what was the standpoint and the attitude before. And through that difference we gain a deeper understanding. And I feel that chapter Animal Magnetism especially, as perhaps no other chapter in the textbook, can only really be understood if one understands those steps that have led to that final edition. This is one reason. But there are other reasons for it, because I really feel that we understand the present edition only from a right standpoint if we can compare then the seven subjects in the final edition with the seven revisions that of the chapter. Did I put that right? If I haven't put it right, I repeat it, but we'll see it when we then tomorrow take the text of the textbook and compare it with the editions. Now, I repeat it again. We'll see at the final edition that really those seven subjects that constitute the final edition of the chapter Animal Magnetism, that they correspond with the seven main edition of that subject. That's something very interesting. Meaning that the first subject of Animal Magnetism has the overall tone that is there in the whole first edition. That the second subject in Animal Magnetism on Spirit is actually only to be understood when one knows the second edition of Animal Magnetism. Because the text in the final edition is so short that it doesn't really yield all the embellishment that is implied with the text. But that embellishment is really then to be found in the older, earlier editions of the chapter. So that's another point why I like to go through these, and I more or less would like you to always remember, so to say, the main issue of every main edition. If we do that, then we also can see that we can fall back on these seven main revisions when we, at the end, state our laws of animal magnetism. Those laws can actually only be understood when one sees the evolution of the animal magnetism subject through the seven revisions. It may now not be understood what I mean, but we will understand it when we do those various subjects. The only thing I want to impress is now that we make somehow a spiritual note for ourselves, what is the main issue in every revision, and keep that in mind. Now, those main points of every revision are actually also laid out in the study aid. In the study aid, which you don't have with you, or most have not with you, and I didn't ask it to bring with you, there on page 35, I have a summary on that, those seven main editions. You just make a note for yourself, and perhaps you have that study aid in the room, and you can look at it, or even bring it to the class this evening. But it is quite enough if you, at this moment, if you open up the animal magnetism book, my book on animal magnetism, on page 50, because on page 50 you see the dates of the main editions. So that when I talk now for 2 hours, perhaps, on these main editions, and I talk about the fourth and the fifth and the sixth and so on, that you know where it is and in which time, at what time these editions, main editions, were edited, and how many editions they included. You have there on page 50 on the bottom, you have a listing of those seven main editions. Then in the second column, you have really the editions itself, that are not the main editions, how many editions were really necessary or were printed on the text of one of the main editions. And then finally, in the last column, you have the dates, and it is necessary because we can see that the development of the subject had a lot to do with Mrs. Eddy's life experience. So those main editions really give a picture and are somehow a reflection on her life experience, because it seems that she first always had to make experiences in life in order to know what was going on in a hidden way and investigate that, and then in the next edition teach what is going on, what she found out as a new aspect and element of animal magnetism. So if you just keep that in front of you, I think that's quite enough, and I'm going to recapitulate the content of those editions. So I first take the first main edition, and I tell you a little bit about that first edition, and you just listen to the main subject in it and make yourself a mental note. We know from her biography that Mrs. Eddy wrote the first edition of Science and Health in 1875, that she gave the manuscript to the printer and then found out after a while that the printer didn't go on with his work. At that time, she became aware of the important subject of investigating evil, and that was at the time when she was telling us that at first she didn't want to investigate evil, but that on God's command she did investigate evil, and therefore she wrote some pages on animal magnetism and sent it to the printer to be incorporated into the chapter on healing the sick, and at that point the printer would go on printing the book. It was a great indication that Science and Health, without the subject of animal magnetism, would not really be complete, that the subject must be treated in such a book. And so it was an indication that something had to be added to that book before the printing would go any further. So we don't have a chapter called Animal Magnetism in the first edition, but what she is presenting was the following. She was complaining in there that her teaching was adulterated, that she was teaching something that was only good and positive and was really building on moral science. First of all, her earlier editions on recapitulation were on moral science. And so she presented her method of teaching on a Christianly moral basis and found out then in the meantime that the students that she have been that she taught were adulterating that healing method by and that they did it very secretly, that they would not only really treat the patients with good thoughts, with positive thoughts, but also with negative thoughts, with malicious thoughts, with evil thoughts. That they would impart, she found out, that they would impart really error to the patient if they wanted to use that patient for a certain purpose. So that she could find out that her teaching was actually not understood at all. That, and she was flabbergasted at seeing that her method could be misused. This is something interesting because Mesmer had the same experience. He, being a very good man, a humanitarian, he would never use his method of animal magnetism for any purpose that is not good, for evil or for making money, for bringing it on the stage and showing the phenomena of animal magnetism on the stage. But his students did. And when he found out that his students did, he was absolutely, how do you say, up in arms. He was surprised, and he said he, practically the same words as Mrs. Eddy said, that he would never have believed that his method would be abused. And so Mrs. Eddy found out that her teaching, which she felt was good, was abused by the students, and therefore could also see that those students who did abuse the method, that they lost then the healing power they had before, and that through falsehood and dishonesty and sensuality, they were using a method that were really only taught for the good of mankind. So she found out that animal magnetism could be practiced in a hidden way, and then therefore it was very difficult to find out really that malpractitioner. So because the malpractitioner malpractice in a mental way, nobody knows about it, it's hidden away, how can you find out the culprit? This was a big question to her. Could she let this thing go on uncontrolled, undiscovered? What should she do about it? So she saw that this is not what she was teaching as metaphysics, but that it was mesmerism. And she defined mesmerism in that first edition and says, mesmerism is that the minds of the sick can be controlled with error instead of with truth. That the minds of the sick can be controlled by error, by evil thought, by dishonesty, by falsehood, by sensuality, by everything that is of a depraved nature. And that those practitioners who were interested in that method did use it and had actually success in it. They found out that they could actually transfer evil thought, erroneous thought, evil qualities, immoral qualities to the patient or to their victims, whatever the victims were, who were not even aware that they were under the treatment of the malpractitioner. And therefore, Mrs. Eddy could see this is a very dangerous thing, that her method could be so misused that instead of healing people, they would make the patients sick and sicker. Also, she could see that it was in secret and could not be uncovered right away, and so she felt there must be something that I have to do about it. And she didn't quite know at first what to do about it. Josie said, at first I was unaware of that mental practice, and I was unaware that the students were putting aside the moral precepts. And she was asking herself, how does that work? How is that possible that that can work? And so she could see that they were imparting mental evil through the inoculation of the mind of the patient. So she found out how they did it, that they inoculated, that the malpractitioner would inoculate the mind of the patient really with demoralized concepts and making them like putty in the face, in the fingers, that they could mold, so to say, the motives of the patient. They could make the patient believe a lie so that they even would believe a lie and take a lie as truth. Can you see it was a complete perversion of her method? Now, why does a malpractitioner do such things? She was asking herself and was answering it in the first edition already, that that they want to demoralize a patient so that that patient, that they could use that patient for their own motives, for their own plans, and therefore bring the patient, so to say, into slavery to the malpractitioner. That was the situation, and she had to redeem it. How? So she gives here some guidelines how it could be done. She asks herself, what hinders us, therefore, or what can protect us from being a malpractitioner ourselves for the first place? And only afterwards, how can we protect the patient from it? First, she thought, what has to be done? What did I do wrong in the teaching that this could be perverted? How can I prevent the student to become a malpractitioner? It wasn't so much the question, how can I reform the malpractitioner, or how can I protect the patient? Her first big problem was, what should I teach the students that they are not becoming a malpractitioner? And her answer here is rather short. She said, namely, they should learn the lesson of a science of life. And science at that time was not capitalized, was still a small s. And this is important to see in the development. But she said, only if they learn the science of life can they be protected from falling into the habit of being malpractitioner. Then she asked the other question, which is natural, namely, how can we protect ourselves against malpractice? And she gives more or less the same answer. Namely, she said that we and the community should understand the science of being. Again, science was with a small s at that time, with a science of being. So in both cases, she could see that the saving method lies in learning and understanding the science of life. And that from that point on, she was putting more stress on teaching the science of life than just the method of dealing with a patient mentally. Yes, this are the only big question that she is dealing with in that first first edition. You can see it is a very small section of the whole problem of animal magnetism. It is that small section where she could see that there are two mental powers at work, that there can be a good mental power at work and an evil mental power at work, and that therefore everybody should be informed about this, that she is very hot there, that the community, that the world as a whole should be informed about these mental powers that could be exercised, because up to that point, really the world was unaware of such a method that thought would have influence on others. That was unknown in the Western world, that was known in the old cultures, in the magical cultures, in those primitive, what we call primitive Völker people, where they use magic for attaining their purpose. Only there it was known that mental power, that there is a mental power, but in the Western world of science, where science was the only thing that was actually showing how to use material power and electrical power, there it was unknown that thought would have power in on other people. So she feels that the world, that the community should be instructed in the mental power. She gives a lot of accent on questions like that we should make more observations, that we should investigate that power much more than what we have done, that there should be a much greater inquiring mind in the community, and that we should gain more insight into this new method, which she felt was quite new, though it naturally is in the magical age a well-known phenomena. And against that, the only thing that she can put up against it was that she said, we must culture a mind that is of the nature of wisdom and intelligence. She did not, at that time, capitalize mind. When she was talking about the mind of God that is good, that mind which she was teaching and practicing in the healing work, namely the mind that is God, that mind was printed in the same way as the human mind, as mortal mind, with a small m. And therefore you can see how easily, therefore, the reader and the student could misunderstand her teaching. If she said that mind controls the body, she meant the divine mind controls the body, and the reader could take mind, and mind was mind, namely thinking, thought, and so with their thought they were controlling the body of the patient, and could control it to the good and to the evil purposes. That was still at that point. That at that point it was not really stated clearly what kind of mind Mrs. Eddy really means when she was speaking about the healing mind, and that only the divine mind should have an influence on men and the universe. And therefore, the conclusion of the student is very logical. They said, all right, if mind controls the body, this is something terrific, so I can control with my thoughts not only the body, but also the mentality of people, also the character of people. I can control other people. I can control the whole universe with mind. And so they were starting out on that mesmeric practice. That was mesmerism, because Mesmer did not know the divine mind. He thought that there is an animal magnetic fluid that was carrying really the forces from one person to the other. So this is the first edition. And we come to the second edition, main edition, which was at the same time as the second edition, only 3 years later. And when we read that chapter now on animal magnetism, which was called at that time mesmerism, the term animal magnetism was not introduced at that time as a title of the chapter. It was called mesmerism. And that treated the whole subject of animal magnetism from a completely different or additionally different standpoint, from the standpoint of spirit, namely from the standpoint of making a clear distinction between truth and error, between good and evil, to make a line of demarcation really between the human mind and the divine mind. That second edition came only out, she wanted to issue it in two volumes, but only the second volume was actually printed. And that second edition had on the cover of the book Noah's Ark. Typical for that period. She was just shaken to and fro at that period on the waters of mortal mind, not knowing how to deal with that question of animal magnetism and of mesmerism and malicious animal magnetism. So the Ark, which is defined in the textbook as the understanding of spirit, you have now typical, the focal tone of spirit, the understanding of spirit, which destroys belief in matter. Or the second day, we also know the firmament, which is defined as light, as the line of demarcation between the real and the unreal. So that symbol was typical for how she was now dealing with the subject of animal magnetism. Because here she made for the first time a clear-cut distinction between mesmerism and metaphysics. Between mesmerism and metaphysics. She wrote a chapter on metaphysics, especially. It was that chapter which later on became that platform, at the end of the chapter on science of being, the platform. At that time, it already contained 19 points. The final version which we have has 32 points. And this is something interesting, which we'll see later on this week, that this gives us another clue of what went on in Mrs. Eddy's consciousness. So at this point, she made a separation in the text and put that which she considered to be metaphysics into a separate chapter.